It really does help, like with the general vibe. If you just put on a smile, smiles just do so much, don't they? Isn't it just God's way of reminding you that he does, in fact, have control of your entire face?
What it tells me is that the spirit and will of God's cheer resides in my heart. And it's so full of cheer that it just has to flow out of my face by me showing my teeth.
You know, I guess we could sort of do like the kids are doing, and we can say where the happy resides. Amen.
Because mm-hmm. you've got the joy, 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 joy down in your heart.
All the way down there.
Down mm-hmm. in your heart to stay. And the devil is a liar. The devil's a liar. Amen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Devil's and a liar, you know what else? Amen. And if he don't like it, he can sit on the tack.
He can sit on the tack.
Right there on that tack. Welcome to Rapping Atlanta. I'm Nita Charisse.
And I'm Nikki.
And in this podcast, we have a frank, honest, and open conversation about the FX show Atlanta.
We have noticed that there are similar features in each show, and during our discussion, we offer our impressions on what those features are. There's a That's So Atlanta moment in each episode that most clearly and accurately depicts the spirit or quirk that is Atlanta and life in the American South.
Darius-isms highlight the special flavor the character Darius brings to the show because he is easily one of the most layered, complex, and compelling characters on television.
There always seems to be a mystical element or some strange thing that happens beyond all logical reason and sometimes scientific explanation. We've all experienced those kinds of moments.
And finally, the SGR moment is very plainly the moment in each show when shit got real and we are reminded that life is not a game and desperation has the power to motivate any and every possible action.
Today, we're discussing Three Slaps, which was directed by Hiro Murai and written by Stephen Glover. We spend some time in Earn's subconscious as he continues to grapple with institutionalized racism.
So what'd you think?
I was wondering how the show was going to address being in Atlanta when all the main characters were in Europe. So the show is called Atlanta. So it's natural to think that the show would always take place in Atlanta. But obviously, if they're touring in Europe, the show is not taking place in Atlanta. So this opening episode kind of does tether us still to Atlanta, the place, and to Atlanta, the culture, the heritage, the history, and all that. So I really appreciate it in that aspect. But this was a show, like usually all the episodes I like to watch like repeatedly, I can just stop it, watch it over again. After it goes off, just run it back over and over again. This show, I was apprehensive about running it back because it was painful to watch.
I completely agree. I did not obsess over every detail and stop and rewind the way I normally do. If I'm honest, I watched it 1.5 times and I can't even really say half because I really just kind of went back to get a couple of details. I wasn't immersed. I figured that would be the best way to discuss this because when I think of this episode in particular, I remember details, but it's the feeling. It was very well done. And I just really liked how they weaved in things that have happened in our recent past and then just kind of commenting, which they always do. But this was like in your face, like this is based on something. So I'll let you go ahead and talk about the opening because I think it was probably the heaviest part of the episode.
Oh my goodness. This whole episode was just heavy. And as we're both parents, like it was just, we're both Black parents. I'm a Black parent of two sons in Atlanta, Metro Atlanta, Georgia. And yeah, this was, but the show starts off on Lake Lanier. We have two fishermen, one Black and one white. They're in the dark catching fish. My dad is a fisherman. He usually goes way early in the morning as opposed to going late at night. There's no way I would go fish at any time of the day on Lake Lanier. Like I remember when I first got into town, and I looked up stats about Lake Lanier. Lake Lanier is the deadliest lake in the United States. And there's actually another lake that's about 30 or so miles away from Lake Lanier. That's about the comparable size of Lake Lanier, but it has a third of the deaths and accidents that Lake Lanier has. And wow. So for those who aren't familiar with Lake Lanier's history, it's a man-made lake. It was made after it's flooded a town that was historically Black, Oscarville. Before it was flooded, there were a series of lynchings that took place in Oscarville because these were self-sufficient Black folks. And Oscarville was one of several towns in America that were historically Black, predominantly Black, that were self-sufficient, that had statistics where the dollar was exchanging like 20 to 30 times within the town before it left. Wealth was being generated. These were newly freed slaves and their descendants. There's one town in Mississippi that I was reading about where they actually cleared away the swamp. So they're working in like this triple digit heat and humidity, clearing away the swamp to establish this Black town because, you know, to escape racism, you know, and the things that were the lynchings that were happening. So let's not forget that when Black folks were emancipated, they had nothing. They were given nothing. They weren't given any medical care or anything, but they also had their own talents that they had developed and, you know, methods of labor and their own personal inventions that they brought with them to, they were farmers, they were builders, they were artisans, and they created these towns where they were able to practice their trades. Oscarville was very successful in doing that. And so as the outsiders, white folks, learned about Oscarville's success, one of them would get drunk, get jealous, accuse somebody of rape, and then there'd be a lynching where the police may or may not have been involved or turned a blind eye or whatever, or may have actually like helped to orchestrate it. And then a lot of people run out of their homes. Now in Alpharetta, that's another area where there were large concentration of Black people. And Ida B. Wells reported on this, where it's like, you ever notice how they're targeting men for lynching that have businesses and are building wealth or are providing opportunity? Oscarville did that same thing. So yeah, the lake is haunted. That when I first moved out here and I kept hearing, it's like, why are these people dying on this lake? Like, let me not go there.
Because of course it is, because the origins of the lake came out of murder. So it's not going to rest. Why is anyone fishing there? Why? Why are they there? It was set up like a typical horror movie where you're like, all of this is wrong. Why are these people so stupid? What are you doing?
I posted a link to a BuzzFeed article where they actually show video of some woman. She's twerking on a boat. It's a white woman. And then she just falls. She falls into the water, and then it looks like she's getting pulled down into the water on the video. It literally looks like that.
And they were probably just mad about the twerking, really.
Yeah. The ancestors. And this was this article. I don't even think this article is the most recent article on this.
See, this was 2021.
But yeah, like 675 people that they know of have died in Lake Lanier. But people go out there, you know, are alone all the time. Never hear from them. They just disappear. And you see where that dock, like on that same BuzzFeed article, you see where that dock just fell with all those people on it.
On the same article?
In the same BuzzFeed article, seeing about 8 million visitors per year, like, no, I'm not going to be any one of those millions.
And the lady of the lake? Oh my God.
Yeah, so in a video of the incident appropriately set to Celine Dion's Titanic hit, my heart will go on. Partygoers can be seen scrambling toward the stairs while the dock slowly begins tipping them toward shaky waters. And when the crowd blocks, the only exit in a panic commotion, some can be seen jumping into the lake from the second floor to avoid getting stuck. So, yeah.
I
don't fuck with Lake Lanier.
Why is anybody though? Why is anybody?
Because they probably don't know the history, or they probably haven't heard it. They just think, that stuff happens to them, but I'm special. So nothing's gonna happen to me. Like, I'm young, white, and free. That's a saying. That's an actual saying that white folks used to say in movies all the time.
What?
I'll post a link to that in the show notes. I'm young, white, and free. You want to Google that? That You'll see an article about being young, white, and free.
Yeah, that makes me mad. All right.
Yeah, so the guy being pulled in, I mean, first the white guy, well, they had this very interesting conversation about whiteness and blackness, how the black townspeople were almost white because they had achieved, you know, money and autonomy and everything. But if they had been actually white, that carries a burden with it as well. And it reminded me of Isabel Wilkerson's book, Caste, mm-hmm. where she talks about how, like, racism hurts both ways, you know, where you just think that white people are just surviving with this privilege and everything, they also pay a price. And they're ignoring a lot of the issues going on within their own community as they're busy exploiting black people as a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That one scene, all of the things that were referenced and touched upon, they could really do a season like on just that. I think I'd be happy with a season where every episode was some sort of historical thing that really happened, like this man-made lake, which happened all the time, or even just like upending some very successful black town and then relating it to what's going on today. I would be happy with like an Atlanta / American Horror Story FX smash up some kind of foolishness. I would not be mad at that, you know, and then like we could every now and then kind of touch on and see what's actually happening in Atlanta. But you know that there's lots of stories in Atlanta alone, not even counting just Georgia, where you could do an entire season arc on the stuff that happened and like how those spirits are wreaking havoc now. And, you know, just it's creepy. And then the no face, wasn't it like hands or whatever?
Yeah, the hands.
Like that was pulling him back.
They can grab them, all black hands, black arms, and then pull them down.
My only thing is like, why are they killing the black man?
They don't discriminate.
Yeah, that's my only beef with those ghosts. Y'all getting it twisted. Y'all is killing everybody. It shouldn't be that. It has happened to a white person for it to get lots of attention. Like these things have been happening. Yeah, like why, if only white people were getting murdered on this lake, it would draw more attention to it. And then I think people would, by way of institutionalized racism, learn about what happened, because I think that you need to discriminate. Look at what happened to y'all. Why y'all killing a black man? I just think that only white people should be dying on this lake.
Well, but the people who are using the lake are still kind of like shitting on the spirits of those people who were lynched there. So I just think they're not discriminating. Like the lake needs to be gone. It needs to be drained and that town needs to be resurrected. So now we realize, thank God, that this is just a dream that L'Aquarius is having while he's in class.
Little L'Aquarius.
God, when the teacher says, okay, L'Aquarius, stop, like, do you have control of the classroom, you know, at all?
Like, I can't even form words, but they were spot on. They were spot, not all schools, not all classrooms, yada, 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 but it was just stale in there. Like, I didn't feel any, like, this kid is excited to be there, like, and also the way the white teacher or administrator immediately was just kind of ready to just assume this deficiency. And the way they see it is like, well, I'm being inclusive and I'm being sensitive, but what you're actually doing is just assuming, well, they don't know any better. The whole attitude was like, we're going to take you out of this situation because you don't know any better. Your people don't know any better. Like that they're going to come and they're going to make things better when you're actually making it worse. You're also not approaching anything with any knowledge, any background knowledge. And you don't care to have any knowledge. You just know that your way is better. Even the worst thing that you could do is still better than the best thing that the black community or this child's like black family, black parents can do. And it's just that arrogance. And it's couched in that, but I'm one of the good ones, that leads us to always say like, liberals are the worst. And yeah, folks, we said this a long time ago before this episode was even aired. liberals are the worst. I would take the hood wearing redneck that's like, niggers breathing up all the white man's air. Credit to Dave Chappelle and Chappelle Show. I will take that because I know what I'm getting more than I would take the liberal person that thinks like, hey, I'm an ally and I'm here for you. And since you don't know how to do anything, here we come with our Brussels sprouts and our beets.
Yeah, capers. So he gets called to the office. I just hate how like there's never any alternative. Like, okay, these kids are excited about this. They're doing this dance. Can we turn this into a learning opportunity? There's never any redirect. So they send him to the office. They call his parents, you know, so disrupting her day. I don't know where his dad is. Laquarius's dad is. Doesn't matter. His grandfather's there. So there is a male figure in his life. Multi-generational parenting going on, which is good. So the mom, you know, he's been cutting up before, and the fact that they want to, well, we think his curriculum is too challenging. Really? Like, the assumption is that it's too challenging? They never think that this kid is bored because the work is too easy or it's uninteresting. I just hate that whole thing where if there's an issue with the child's behavior, then it's no fault of the teacher, no matter what their teaching style is or anything like that. And I'm not saying that every teacher is bad, but the thing is, the entire class was cutting up. So she did not have any control of the class. And the fact that Laquarius is repeatedly disrupting the class, they never thought to give him any additional work, you know, in detention or anything like that, or simply talk to him and ask him what his interests are to understand it's like the kid is not the problem. How you're connecting to the kid, therein lies the issue, you know. And I just hate that from having to deal with issues with my own kids, where I'm just like, I remember when I was teaching him kindergarten, homeschooling him during the pandemic, and we're going over numbers, but they go to the number 10, and it's like the number 10 is 1 and 0. The kindergarten teacher had never taught the concept of zero. She did not start teaching the concept of zero until I said, are you going to teach the kids about zero? Because that matters, especially when they come to double digit numbers. Then she started doing it. But it was always, he's not getting it. He needs, you know, he needs review or whatever.
If it's more than two, it's you. Mm-hmm. And if you've taught long enough, you know that if it's a group of kids, like you said, the whole class was dancing, and there's never like a thing of, well, maybe it's something that I'm doing. Let's look at my approach. Is there something that we need to change? And there's also never enough data collected to even make sure, again, that it is just this person. Maybe it's a couple of kids at this particular time. Like, you're right. There are never any other things explored to see what can be fixed. It goes directly to punitive, and punitive is supposed to be your last resort, or like your second to last resort. You do everything that you can to make sure the environment is right before you say, okay, we need to bring in reinforcements. Also, if you're going to contact the parent, it needs to be on the same thing of like, how can we fix this? No, it's automatically assumed like there's something that is deficient in you. And yeah, it's so messed up because it's like, but you're the one with the degree and the credentials and the whatever, and you're supposed to be shepherding this child towards that. So if something is happening here, you're supposed to have the tools and the strategies or the resources to connect with the tools and the strategies to see what's happening here. Well, now, am I saying that kids are never misbehaving? I'm not saying that at all, but that's where a lot of white educators and leaders, they go first because they have this thing in their heads about what's happening in this kid's household before even finding out like what's going on. And I wish that I could say like, oh, that just happened in this dream. This happens every day, all day. And Black teachers and leaders are guilty of it too, because we've all been educated in a system that is built on white supremacy. It was very hard to watch. It was infuriating.
Yeah. Everything from them standing there witnessing the child getting chastised, even before that, the parent chastising their child, the grandfather chastising their child, while I was like, take it to the car because these white folks are going to be watching. So I'm not sure why she stood in the hallway and did that. But even before that, wasn't the administrator, I'm guessing the principal or vice principal, she was Black. This counselor is going to come in here and overtalk her.
And talk. Ooh, when I saw that, I was like, first of all, I'm leading here. But that happens. It's like, yes, you are the leader here. You know, this Black woman who probably has like years of teaching and leading under her belt. And also, you might want to shut up talking about anything because I'm the one that's going to connect. I want to snatch her through the television. But that is the attitude, because it is, I'm coming here to fix. You all are messing up. You need my cutting edge, whatever. I know what's going on. I watch Lean on Me. I watch Freedom Riders. I watch something. I saw one story from one person. And like, they don't think that Black people are different because we are not seen as people. We are this thing. Like when you learn about elephants, elephants do this, is what they eat, is where they live. And that's it. We're not looking into like, yeah, but how do the East Coast elephants feel? And what about their experience? No, they're elephants. And that's how we're seen. And that's the attitude that they're taking. I don't understand why that principal just let her get away with that. Because she would have been smacked all up and through.
Well, I mean, and again, we know from like other principals at other schools, like, I'm not going down for you. Or, you know, even if it was about defending the parents and everything, well, I need to keep my job. So there's that dynamic going on, but it's like, at what cost? The children's, you know, you're paying, the children pay the price. Ultimately, we go out into the hallway. Mom is like, since you want to dance, dance. I'm like, okay, again, do this at home or in the car.
Ridicule your child at home.
Yes, ridicule your child at home. Or in the car on the way home. The grandfather slapping the boy. He didn't slap him that hard. Like, just slap, slap, slap. Like, what did he say? What you doing? Stop messing up. Or stop.
Like, okay, it was just grandpa. That this isn't effective at all. But, and I forgot to say, the dance that it's Loquarius, right? I love how they just came up with the most...
Larry.
Yeah, of course. Bob. Yeah. The dance that he was doing was perfectly. It was a perfect recreation of the dance that this unnamed, I don't know if this kid has a name, but the little boy whose GIF meme, whatever, has been used in everything. And it's the Ron Clark Academy student. Ron Clark Academy is located, if not at Atlanta exactly, it's in Georgia. And right,
so the Ron Clark Academy is a KIPP Academy, and they actually put dancing because it's like a cultural celebration and it gives the kids a sense of pride. I don't know if you've seen that meme where there's like a white teacher and he's doing the whip and nay-nay with a group of girls.
Yeah, I think it's him, isn't it? Yeah, that's him. That's Ron Clark. That's, yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where I get where you are like coming from and like what you're trying to do. Like, if we're going to talk about shaking things up and not continuing the cycle of educating our kids based on white supremacist ideas, then yeah, this really tracks. But what's annoying about KIPP is that it's always the white face that's doing it. It's never like, I have a theory. Do I have any other, you know, Black or brown colleagues who are also who are educators or psychologists or like child psychologists or something that I could run this by, and then also in my running it by them, someone who shares my passion, maybe they can be the face. I don't think that there's anything disingenuous about doing that, because if you're really trying to, and this is a favorite phrase in the ed nonprofit world, disrupt systems or disrupt white supremacy, the first disrupting thing is to take your face off. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it's the same thing. And yes, you have Black folks around you, but it still ends up being focused on you, because this country can only digest things when it's white. Oh, like, yeah, white people are the spoonful of sugar that's helping the medicine go down. If it's a Black person doing this dance that they made up on TikTok, okay, you might get a couple of views. And all those views are probably from the choreographers that are going to then copy it and then get way more views and endorsements. It's the same thing. And that's what makes me, it makes me roll my eyes. And then I feel kind of bad. It's like, well, at least they're trying to do something, but I'm tired of at leasting it. Mm-hmm. The thing that you need to do is say, I have a theory. I also have these resources and money that historically Black and brown educators don't have behind them, not for lack of trying, but because of the way the system is set up, white supremacy. You're talking about disrupting systems, but then you just become a part of it. I really appreciated L'Aquarius being spot on with that dance, but then I love how it's spun out into all these other things.
Absolutely.
You know, and the Ron Clark, I'm glad that we never went. I believe it still exists. There's actually a movie that came out in 2006. I think we need to, at a later date, watch that and discuss it. Like, if we really feel like getting mad and losing some weight, burning some calories, I think that we should watch that. So then we kind of move into what becomes like a retelling of the Hart family murders.
Yes. Devante Hart. Yeah. So actually, before that, we go home to L'Aquarius's house. And, you know, after this woman is like, she's horrified from these three non-slaps, pretty much. We're going to get you out of there because, yeah, this kid, he's well-dressed. He's clean. His hair is cut. His parents, both of his parental figures showed up, but he's in a horrible situation. Okay. He goes home.
Exactly.
There's food in the refrigerator. You know, the house is clean. It's not a, it's a regular home. It's a regular home, regular house. It is a house. It's not an apartment complex. Not to say that families living in apartments are any less fortunate or well off, but this woman,
exactly,
is not a crackhead. Now, the real Devante Hart, his mother had a cocaine addiction. And, but at the point where he was taken, she was babysitting him. You know, she had given up custody because she thought that a friend of the family, or
is the aunt,
the aunt was going to get adopted, but she was babysitting her own children. She was clean, but she still got taken away. The kids still got taken away. This happened in Texas. So, you know, yeah, that was the difference. But the family that Devante Hart ended up going to, they had moved from place to place, from state to state, because there have been a series of allegations following them. But because they had created the story, they retold the story. So anyway, we go to this lesbian couple's house. Do you even remember their names? I didn't even want to commit them to
memory. I don't remember. I just kept calling it the woman from Lovecraft and other lady that I don't know. She was the woman that transformed into the other thing. She was with Ruby. Yeah, the mean one.
Okay. When he steps into the house, you know, they put the little hat on his head. So it reinforces the Devante Hart connection, you know, because he actually wore that little hat like it. He was younger when he had been taken from his mom, 4 years old. This boy is obviously older, you know, L'Aquarius. But he steps into the house. The house smells. There's no telling what it smells like. It's raggedy. It's crazy. Like,
and it looks like they're like always doing renovations. Like, you can see, like, you know, like they're about to paint. It just looks like you're in transition, or maybe you're squatting somewhere. It was really random.
Very random. It reminded me of probably what waits inside a lot of these homes in these neighborhoods that are being gentrified. So right now, like, you know, with the Beltline going on in Atlanta, when we went to that festival, we did the show from the Beltline Festival. The Beltline is this project that's been going on for years. It was created by I want to say a UGA student, and it was meant to unite the neighborhoods and like cut down on, you know, or like push back on Atlanta's segregationist history. But it's just ended up pricing out middle class and poor people out of the city.
So typical.
Yeah. So there are these neighborhoods where you have these big Victorian era style homes, you know, Southern Gothic classic homes. Mm-hmm. And whereas in certain neighborhoods they used to be Black owned, they're now being gentrified. The Blacks are priced out, taxes are going up and whatnot. So only a certain type of resident can live there. If you can get a loan, you know, people who can get loans, right, or people who already have the money. So it looks like they had a big, huge house. This is easily a $500,000 house in Atlanta, even if it's in a dilapidated state. And we know from conversation that they have later on, before they decide to commit suicide, that they had gotten a big loan. So they're living off of this loan money because they were seen as heroes.
Yep.
You know? And like the Hart women, they created this narrative that these Black children were far worse off, as you were saying earlier, than they were. So even though their house was dilapidated, you know, in the middle of being renovated, and there was a stench, and these kids don't even have their own bedrooms. They're like, didn't he say that he was sleeping in a storage closet at one point? What's hilarious, like, she handcrafts this towel, she changes the dude's name, because my grandfather had his name changed. So my grandfather, my mother's side, he was actually a Moultrie, M-O-U-L-T-R-I-E. The teacher said that was too hard for him to spell, so changed it to M-O-O-T-R-Y. Changed his surname.
Just legally? Just...
From then on, he was called Moultrie. Now, this was like at the turn of the... This was at the turn of the century, coming out of like... emancipation.
So yeah, there's no checks or balances or like verifying nothing.
So all the Moultries, M-O-O-T-R-Y, we're related, you know.
Well, yeah, because it's like, yeah, this name just started.
Yeah. But yeah, this woman gonna change his name to Larry because she couldn't spell it, let alone, I mean, never mind asking, you know, asking what the proper spelling is or whatever. She couldn't spell it, so that's a problem. But the I love how they insert humor. Do you have a washcloth? Washcloths.
Yes. Yes. I was like, oh wow. They and did you notice how when he asked for that, the other kids looked like washcloth is the word that must never be said in this house. Like, oh, like they had that look like we've all been through it. And I really liked how you already see, like, these kids have been with these women for a long time. There are already things that have been established, and it's obvious that they all had their washcloth moment. But, you know, they communicated with their eyes, which I find that we have that instantly with Black people that we've never met before. Yes. Where you're like, do you see this shit?
Yeah. We talked about nonverbal communication. We excel at that. Yeah. So wait, why don't white people use washcloths? Like, because this is not the only time where didn't Dave Chappelle make fun of that as well?
Everybody makes fun of it. It's everywhere, from the not using the washcloths to the not. I know you saw the Twitter thread with how they don't wash their legs. Yeah. And wasn't it you that told me, or maybe I saw like a rendering of like how the Moors or how Black people had to show them how to wash? Like, you need something to wash, because now this is dirty and now this is going to get clean. You can't take your dirty hand and just like, that's not doing anything. You know, you need some agitation of skin stuff, some sloughing off. It just doesn't seem like that's what they naturally do. And I thought that was hilarious. Like, that was a nice little, like, yeah, we're checking off all the things without feeling like it's checking off, you know, and they still touched on the food. But I just loved how it was like, well, you have too much oil and such. It just reminded me of those people that learn one thing about a group and they just kind of just assume that this is happening, not knowing the history behind the foods that we eat. And like, yeah, some of it's bad, but I wonder why. Oh, maybe it's because we were given, you know, the shit parts of every animal to then feed our families. And then we found a way to turn the messed up part into the best part. And then it becomes a delicacy. And you never find out about the Black people in the kitchen that made that happen. That was a plug for High on the Hog. If you have not watched that,
love that documentary. Y'all,
you have to watch it. And season 2 is supposed to be coming out at some point.
When my mom and my sister come out on the weekend, because mom doesn't have Netflix, and I'm like, let's like make sure.
That is a thing that you watch with your mom and your grandma. I watched it with my grandmother here. You know, they had to come here for Hurricane Ida, and even with like not having power and things like that, I'm going to treasure that like forever. Yeah. So I recommend that to everybody.
I love how we were able to draw positivity out of this horrible. Yes. That's what we do.
Amen. 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 Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
I thought you were going to say hallelujah, because you always say hallelujah. And it makes me so mad.
Hallelujah.
I used to be so mad when I was little, like, say, yeah. I don't know why that affected me. It's like, you're stopping right there. It made me just as angry as when a teacher erases the board and she forgets one little, I would stare at that. I would miss the entire lesson because it's like, erase the other book. I felt like it was being done on purpose. Wow. That always made me mad. I'd be like, I don't know how to divide now because you didn't erase a thing from this morning's English notes.
You are so funny. So you see how the woman, she made the fried chicken in the microwave. She's about to put it in the microwave. And then the other lady told her, oh, well, it was a little dry last time, so put it in for less. So then you could see the blood leaking out of the chicken.
Everything was so white.
Yes.
Oh,
there
God.
Was no fat or anything like that. And there was no seasoning. You know that there was no seasoning. Then was there like avocado slices and the capers hiding amongst the avocado slices?
Was it avocado slices?
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't Brussels sprouts.
It wasn't Brussels sprouts.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
I have developed a true affection. I love oven roasted Brussels sprouts now. Like, and then I've done the balsamic vinegar.
But that sounds good.
It is good. Like, it's just, yes. Yeah. a fried or roasted vegetable, that's my jam. Yeah. So after that, did they have him? They told him to work out in the yard, right? They had them farming and then wanted him to sing. They said everything but Negro spiritual.
Yes. That's,
they wanted the kids to sing Negro spirituals.
Yes.
That they were working out in the yard.
You know? Because he started singing something else. Was it Gucci Mane?
Yeah.
He started singing something that he wanted to sing. And it was like, no, sing, Swing Low Sweet Chariot or whatever it was that you wanted him to sing.
I think they requested that he sing something ironic or humorous or whatever. And I'm like, okay. Like,
yeah, yes. that was making me mad. I was getting mad at the actors. I'm like, where's IMDb? I'm like, I was gonna do a rewatch of Lovecraft, but not anymore. Like, because that woman is too, and she has the perfect face. She's so scary.
Yeah,
she has a scary face.
I don't know if they show the woman with a cell phone in her hand, but the actual Hart family, they were living out their life on Facebook. They were doing it for likes, So I felt like that request for him to sing, something cheerful and humorous was, performative. Like,
yeah.
Our kids are so freaking happy. Then, okay, let me center myself. When they actually go out to the farmer's market, they got the kid with the sandwich board on, free hugs. And the man that comes up and says, oh, is that your dad?
Is hugs your dad? Okay, so I laughed and then was mad at myself for laughing. Then I was mad at Stephen Glover for writing that or whoever in the room, whoever, because that was funny. And it was very Boone. It was very Boondocks. Except on Boondocks, some nigga would show up like, yeah, I'm hugs. What? That was funny. That was perfect.
It was
perfect. And then it's just like, but it also reminded me of how like white people will say something and it's like, yeah, I know you don't know about this, but if you had just thought about that for 30 seconds, you would see how stupid that is. Like when I show up with my hair different, somebody's like, oh my God, your hair grows so fast. It was like just as stupid as that kind of comment. Like grows and changes color so quickly. Like, good and well, that man's name isn't Hugs. But then on the flip side, kind of being able to envision a white person really thinking that, well, their names are so different. Maybe somebody's name is. So it just made too much sense. It was actually perfect, but I was mad that I was laughing.
It was great writing. It was great writing. It just really confuses you, like makes you feel all these types of emotions.
All types of ways.
Yeah. L'Aquarius throws off the sandwich board and goes and hugs the cop. And the cop, saying, wait a minute, is this your kid? And the lady coming out and saying, yeah, those are our adopted children. We have a kombucha stand over there. Like,
she was trying to throw out all the things. She was basically like, here are all of our liberal signifiers.
Yes.
To calm him down. Like the way she did it, like, yeah, that kombucha stand over here. Here's my, here's the nonprofit that I have. I'm a good one. I'm not somebody that's kidnapping someone or whatever. And it's a testament to how they act like they don't know what's going on, but you know what your privilege is, even though you pretend like, well, I don't have privilege. I didn't grow up rich. Like they play both sides. And so just like the woman who saw, who was told by the black man to leash her dog. And then she's like, I'm going to call the police. So you know what that does.
Yeah.
Even though when it happens, like, well, if you just comply, well, what's wrong with calling me? But y'all know exactly what you're doing, because when it's time, you pull out all those signifiers so that you can get the cop on your side. And now this white boy who's trying to ask you for help, you know, you have a black kid that's willingly coming towards you. That cop should have been like, this is a dead giveaway that something is going on. Like, the cop should have seen, like, this boy is willingly coming towards me. This is a black boy. He's just about the age where we stop finding them cute and they turn into threats. And he's coming towards me. So something is wrong. But their whiteness is that powerful. And, you know, maybe he's not even a liberal type person, you know, but he's probably like, oh, it's one of them. Oh, like, they actually like the darkies. So, you know, just didn't even try to find out what was going on.
Yeah.
It was perfectly humiliating. I mean, it was infuriating. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I see what's happening here.
Yeah.
The Hearts' carefully crafted narrative of a parcel of formerly abused black children and two progressive white moms fighting for them gave them cover for their own abuse. So those kids, they were beating those kids. They were reported on multiple times with those kids coming to school and having scars and
bruises. Nothing's being done.
Nothing was done. They lied and said the little girl fell down the stairs. Now, these children were obviously malnourished. They were not the size that they were supposed to be. You know, they were being starved. I hate how the cop goes, oh, yeah, he's complaining because, you know, he probably won't get to play his PlayStation. So assuming that these white women, you know, are liberals, those liberals with money, you know, those liberals with disposable income, there's no way that they could be poor and abusive to these black kids because they've taken these black kids in, you know, and obviously if they're black kids, they're coming from a worse situation, as you pointed out before. So yeah. Then when the other social worker, you know, some neighbor calls the cops again, another social worker, instead of the typical social worker that usually comes and visits with them, comes to the house, a black woman. She makes moves like she's really gonna change things. And they never really articulate what happens to her, but we know that she's dead. Because what, her head is in a jar in the refrigerator, according to that boy's dream. But that was a dream that he was having after eating like the horrible food. Mm-hmm. But then also her clipboard is in the trash as they're preparing to go to the Grand Canyon.
Right, right. Yeah, that's one of those dream things. Like, it doesn't have to have a why behind it. It just is. Or maybe like, he's like, that lady never came back. Maybe they killed her. Like, these people are crazy. I mean, he's working in fields. You know, they're dressed crazy. Like, nothing even makes sense. Like, just because these are secondhand clothes doesn't mean that they have to be combined in a way that looks like we are being taken care of. But at least we have this. As at least we always are supposed to be satisfied with. Well, at least we have to be happy to be here and not want for too much more. And it's heartbreaking. It caused me to revisit that story kind of against my will.
The child was obviously sick when the counselor, the CPS worker comes in. It's like, what is this? Oh, those are blueberries. They have medicinal value. Like
you're not giving a child any medicine. And I like how Helen was like, okay, mm-mm.
Like, she was taking notes. Like, yeah. Like, and she said, we're going to get you out of here. And the minute she said that, then, you know.
There have been stories in the news, I'm pretty sure it's not just local, about CPS workers and like finding out that they're involved in these things, that they're not, like, I just saw this like last week. And from my own experience with them, that things are not done. But see, when something like this heart thing happens, you can bet that they're all saying, well, I put in the thing. That was no exaggeration there.
No.
There's no exaggeration.
And again, that's what made this episode so hard to watch, because, you know, although there was some creative license taken, it was so, you know, on the nose. So the lady shows up, she does her inspection, she takes notes, and then the mean one whisks her away and we never see her again. Then the next day, LaQuarius wakes up to find them packing, preparing to go to the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. He sees through their BS and he's like, where are we really going? I forget what their answer was, but it was like a non-answer.
Yeah, like it was nothing. They didn't really say anything.
Yeah, so then that brings us to the scene where they get into the van, and the music that was playing was just so I took note of that. It was a Wilson Phillips song, and I just thought, oh my goodness, it's so
Was it Hold On
characteristic.
for One More Day, or it was just it just
The
had that?
dream is still alive.
Yeah, all their songs sounded the same.
Yeah, I was not a fan. The dream is still alive. Look here in my eyes. Can you see what I'm feeling? The dream is still alive. The one of you and I, and my heartache is healing. I couldn't let it die. No, I knew it would survive. The dream is still alive. Do they release the dog that eats hamburgers out into the wild at that point?
Yeah, because
And
he's looking at the dog and then they set the dog free. And I'm like, okay, so you're setting the dog free to make sure, you know, another little nice little liberal checklist
yeah, they set the animal free.
there.
And then, the one admits she just thought she was doing the right thing, and they were given that huge loan, because they kept getting away with it. The actual Hart sisters in real Hart sisters, the Hart family in real life, that couple, I think I mentioned earlier, they escaped through like three different states. They had these kids for 10 years and, kept getting more kids. When she says, why didn't anyone stop us? The question, it's a valid question, but it's like, why did you keep on doing that yourself? Like, I hate that notion. Some people think this, and I don't think it's exclusive to white people or white women or whatever. I think there are a lot of people walking around who are just like, well, I messed up, but it's everybody else's fault. That just it really upset me. This whole episode just kept upsetting me. And
It's upsetting, but it's the mark of someone who is privileged. Like you've never had to own up. Like it's just like, well, you should have taken the keys out of my hand. And you know, like it just goes back to what we said. I'm pretty sure it was earlier in this episode where they know the privilege, they know what it is that they're getting away with, they know the power that they have, and they choose when they want to have the blinders on. And when they want to take them off, like saying, why didn't someone stop us? She knew that something was wrong. Maybe the other one didn't. I mean, the other one is the arrogant, abusive one. I think they're both horrible, but she definitely did not seem to care about the kids at all. The other one, from what I could see, at least was able to like successfully lie to herself that she cared, or maybe had some sort of just like the way that you have compassion for just another human. Because like we're all a part of the, you know, human race. But the other one, I feel like this was maybe a thing, a gig that the other chick wanted, and she was like, hey, like we're getting money, you know, like it's I put them up with the same people who just like foster kids because of the checks.
Yeah, that's
It's just sad. This
it
episode
is
is
sad.
just
Well, the but even before that scene, I'm forgetting the scene where they speak to each other with their faces.
Yes.
And we've talked about that before. And that just goes to show you, like, yeah, that's an Atlanta thing. That is a Southern experience thing. The little girl say her hair hurts? Poor
Yes.
baby.
Yeah. And the only thing I could think of was like, well, it's obviously not being combed. So is that baby's hair so matted that it started to like, you know, knot up like on itself or on its scalp, or like maybe for her to even like try to, you know, like when you get really, really sick, like you have the flu and like your skin hurts, any extremity, like it just hurts because gravity. It made me think you can tell that girl has a lot of hair on her head because it's all packed in. So I bet like even just for her to move, there's so much pain because depending on how long she was there, you know, her hair ain't been combed since she's been with them.
No, and then I wondered if it had been washed. So there's no telling what's
What's
going
in
on.
there? And that child is old enough to know, to have a before, to have a reference about, like, I know that this is not supposed to be like this. So who knows? She may have even tried to like put some water on it herself. You know, they don't strike me as people who go behind the kids to make sure that they clean themselves. So it seems like, oh, you probably just go in the bathroom and do whatever. There is no real care here. Everything, yeah, like you said before, is performative. And they show that, like, there's something that happens when they're all sitting in the kitchen and Rihanna sits spirit animal. And then the other girl's almost like giddy with like, tell me that she is a part of a, or like that she's a part of a, something she said to try, like she's worried about like trying to make sure that Rihanna is allowed to say something. And she's like, we got to comment on this, right?
They asked about her ethnic background. Like, tell me that she belongs to a, you know, certain ethnic background.
Who are you?
Her to say that. Yeah. Again, we've said it before. Liberals are the worst. We've talked about it in depth on the, when we reviewed Juneteenth. Like, just that whole, yeah.
And well, see the cold. So is Juneteenth, whichever episode from season two it is, where you read the ad about the Black Panther, of the person who's like, I really want to watch Black Panther, get the full experience, but basically like, I need a nigga to watch it with me. Whichever episode that is.
That was the first episode.
So well, that's when we say liberals are the worst.
Oh no, season two, episode one. Yeah.
That's where we first said it. Liberals are the worst.
We're going to keep on beating. Yeah, beating that drum. It's true. And this is a fine example of that. So Laquarius peeps game for real, and escapes. I was so happy for him, but I was just like, well, what about the other children? You know, true life story, there were three. All of the children's bodies were found except for two in the actual heart story.
Oh, I thought it was just one. Okay.
No. So Devante and Hannah are two. They never accounted for them. So maybe they did run away. Maybe they're alive somewhere, but they found all the rest of their bodies.
Well, they showed it at the end of the dream. They showed the other kids on the news.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. That's right. So they were, okay, good. That's right.
So they all got away, which I was like, I was happy for him, but I was heartbroken because it, you know, it made me think about that story. And I don't think that I realized that there were bodies that were never found. That little boy is alive.
I hope he is.
I just believe it. I just believe. I think I just want to believe that. Yeah. Because it's just so... It's the most bizarre example of white supremacy there is. It's just so bizarre.
Yeah.
So weird. But that scene where they're all talking to each other without speaking. Yeah, we've talked about it, but like when you really think about Black people we're amazing and resilient and have just been through so much. It's like, of course we know we had to hone that skill of just looking and not saying anything to do the, do you see this shit? Also to do the, Harriet says she's going to be here at 8. Don't be slipping. It is in that same, I don't know what word to use, but it's in the same order of like, if you wanted me to know who somebody was and you were like, you know, Toya. So am I saying it's Toya? Oh, that Toya. Like, which one is the second Toya that lets me know that you're talking about Toya Jenkins and not Toya Williams? Yeah, Robert. No, Robert. Oh, Robert.
Robert from around there, back down the way. Robert.
That is the vocal representation of I book number one. Robert. Oh, the Robert who got shot. Like the first one is like regular Robert who live around the corner. Oh, Robert who's dead. Okay, got it.
Why did you just say the dead one?
I don't know. Like
the one who got shot. So the kids, Laquarius escapes. He goes back home to his mom's house.
Yes. Yes. Why didn't his mom, she was just like, oh, hey. So random to me. But then you got to chalk that up to being a dream, I guess.
I guess, because there's no way I would have ever let them take my child and put them in the system. Like, I don't care how upset I was. Like, our whole thing, we decided a long time ago, the kids will go to the village in Nigeria. like, you know, you take for granted the things that we do and provide for you. You could go to the village and see what's really up, you know, and right. I don't want that to happen. So I'm just like laying the foundation for good behavior now, mm-hmm. you know, because they ain't gonna be running the streets, that whole eighth grade thing. Yeah. But I don't know, not all to each mom, you know, they have their own way. Like there might've been somebody in the family before that really wilded it out and you know, the DNA. So
yeah, that was like a resignation to it. But I mean, I don't know. I still just kind of kept in first and foremost in my mind that this is a dream. And, you know, like if this dream was like based on, if this dream was based on something that happened, a lot of times details are very much condensed in dreams, and things where you would expect an outsized reaction get nothing. And then things that are very small get like a crazy reaction. So I kind of chalked it up to that, but it almost seemed like, is this an alternate world where that is a thing that just happens, where like without any kind of like adjudication or like paperwork, your child is just taken. And so it's become so commonplace. There's so many ways that you could take that. But I really thought she was going to be like, oh my God. And she was just really like, but she did tell him like, these white folks will kill you. Like she said that, like when she was going. Yeah. So I guess if you look at it like that and you just take it at face value, she's like, see, I told you, you know, and then you could see him being the appreciation for his house. Like, no, yeah. He's not like, you know, in a mansion, but it's like, there's order to this house. It doesn't stink. Everything is where it's supposed to be. There are people here, you know, that care about me. Like, this is my mm-hmm. home. There are people here who love me. And I'm going to listen to what mama was telling me. I thought she was like, really like overdoing it with these people want to kill me. But I now know people literally put you in a van and some crazy clothes and a fedora and try to like kill you by driving to the Grand Canyon. So let me listen to my mom. Yeah. So, yeah.
Our elements. So what was your thought? That's what Atlanta.
That's silent conversations, which, you know, that's so Atlanta. That's so Southern. That's so Black. But the children having the silent conversations, like, this bitch is, they're about to kill us. We gonna die. Yeah.
All right. So, there were no Dariusisms because he wasn't in this episode. Mystical element.
Lake Lanier for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what was your SGR moment?
When L'Aquarius senses what the mother's parents have in store. Yeah, that little dog pissed me off. I could tell he hated that dog too. That dog was doing better than everybody in the house, which tracks. So,
yeah. Hold my tongue.
Thank you for listening. Rappin' Atlanta is recorded and produced by Nita Charisse and Nikki Ebo. Our theme music is Joy Clark's Galaxy Groove, performed by Joy Clark. Discover more about this talented artist at joyclarkmusic.com. Rappin' Atlanta's artwork is created by Prime Vice Studios. Learn more about this intellectual property development agency at primevicestudios.com. You can find us on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube. Don't forget to rate, comment, subscribe, and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Rappin' Atlanta.